Welcome back to Jim Brown's Common Sense. Now, here's your host and professor of thinkology, Jim Brown.
You think these political slogans, every candidate's got a slogan, how they're going to change America, how they're going to change their part of the country, and they all try to use slogans to influence you. Do these slogans work, and how do they use these slogans to pop up and make them work? Don Mann is with me right now. He's president of Right Mann Consulting, the author of an interesting new book we're going to talk about called Okay, God, Now What? I'd like to ask God about this election coming up here to get his thoughts about what's going on. But let's talk to Don Mann first. Don, good morning. Welcome to the program.
Hey, good morning, Jim. Thank you for asking me. I'm glad to be here.
Well, Don, tell me, we hear all these political slogans all the time and where people try to get some catchy phrase to be their mantra to get people to vote for them. Tell me, if you will, do these slogans work, and what's your view of all the political slogans? We're hearing everywhere right now.
Yes. Matter of fact, you're only hearing them, you're hearing more of them, and they're more negative than they were before, so that the process is going on like it has been always. The reason that they use slogans and catchphrases is because that's the way the human brain operates. They're trying to match with the current catchphrases and attitudes and emotions that you already have inside of you and trigger them so that you respond from emotional level to those advertisements, because that's the way the human being works. That's how you make decisions. That's how you move forward in anything, is linking to your emotions. And so the fruit of it is that the top levels of science, Madison Avenue, psychotherapy, neurology, all of these experts are being applied to develop the most catchy, the most mind-triggering, and unfortunately the most mind-numbing slogans they can do.
Yeah, we sure got them out there. Now, do you think, Don, from your experience, does the negative slogan work better or the positive slogan, or can you turn either around? You seem to have a lot more negativity out there now. What seems to work better?
Well, first of all, way back in Andrew Jackson's political campaign many years ago, it was full of negative campaigns. They've discovered that a negative campaign is 4 to 10 times more effective at persuading people to vote for their candidate than any other method.
I guess people's emotion, they get mad about the system, things aren't working for them, and maybe they relate that to the politicians. And so you build up a negative theme that really incites people all the more, I guess. Does that make sense?
Yes, that's right. What happens is that your self-identity is the key to all of this. The stronger your self-identity and the more valid the basis of your self-identity, the more you can resist fears from triggering you into emotion. But as they trigger you, they keep hounding you with these things, they keep painting vivid images that trigger things in your mind to get you into fear. Now, the problem with that is that when you get into fear of any kind, you go into the automatic panic-flight response. Your brain shuts down, you no longer can think clearly, and you're looking only at that candidate as your savior. So that's what happens, that's what they're trying to do in these processes, and it's the way that most human beings operate most of the time.
Well, Don, can you give me a few specific examples? Can you look at the election either now or past elections, maybe going back to John McCain and Obama 4 years ago? Give me an example of some slogans that either are very effective or maybe missed the mark.
Well, that's sort of tricky, because you have positive slogans like right now for Mr. Obama, it's forward. For Mr. Romney, it's believe in America. You know, back it was change. And so there was one of the famous ones called Tippy Canoe and Tyler Too. It had to do with the battle that Harrison won, and that was where that slogan came from. The slogans that they use, those positive ones, only comprise 1 to 5% of the negative or of the political campaigning process. The rest of the 95% or so of it is full of negative images and pictures designed to trigger you into fear.
I'm not knocked over. First of all, with Obama, you say change. Well, I guess my response, if he hit me with that, was, look, Mr. President, we heard that 4 years ago, and things haven't changed very much, you know. And then with Romney, believe in America. Well, that's one of the problems with this campaign. We're struggling to define what we believe in. What are our values? What is the role in America in terms of the rest of the world? Are we exceptional? And so I guess the question I'd ask Romney is, it's easy to say believe in America. Mr. Romney, Governor Romney, what kind of America, what level of America do you want us to believe in? So I guess it's tough to come up to with a generic slogan that really incites people and really gives us a point of reference.
Well, the purpose of a slogan is to encapsulate a lot of ideas. As you just described, the more freeform those ideas, the better. Remember, a famous one was, "I like Ike." Okay, and so that was talking about President Eisenhower after World War II. Now, that was a very powerful slogan because when you went into the voting booth and the only thing you could think of was, "I like Ike," guess who you're going to vote for? So that was a very powerful and effective one, but it was very general. I mean, do you like his shoes? Do you like his style? Do you like what he's going to do? You know, like his message? It's very, very, very ambiguous, but appealed to people, triggered things in them at that day that worked for them. And part of what happens in the campaigning process, and we're seeing that, we've been seeing it all along, which is why some people don't even know what the primary slogans are for Mr. Obama or for Mr. Romney, is because they're constantly searching for the messages that appeal to people. But you remember, a slogan is not just one word. The definition of a slogan is that it is a statement that encapsulates a lot of big ideas. For example, the Pledge of Allegiance is also a slogan. So it appeals to people, talks a lot of big things, and works in it. The thing to understand is that it works with your mind, number one. Number two, this is the greatest advertising campaign on the planet right now, the presidential elections in the United States. And all the top guns of advertising and manipulation and control in messaging and imagery is being put forward in this political process.
Boy, they sure are. And the money driving this thing, you know... I hate to admit it, I was a statewide official in Louisiana, and I figured up here recently the money I spent over maybe five, six statewide campaigns. I spent over $8 million, which I think is outrageous, and wish I could go back and salvage all that money that I didn't have. I was able in the system to raise it from supporters. But, I mean, today they're raising billions of dollars to get this message across. Boy, it's a public relation agencies dream to have those kinds of resources out there to develop all these slogans along the line, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. Well, actually, they bought up all the free time that's available right now and all the media bases for it. I think one thing to understand is that if people don't contribute money to their favorite politician, then that politician has to go to other sources for the money that may not be the best for the people. So you got to think about that a little bit. But remember, the purpose of the campaign process, particularly the negative messaging that goes on, is designed to get you to operate out of fear. And when that happens, you can't think rationally and clearly, and you get highly emotionally involved. You can't even have discussions about it because you can't think clearly. And that's what they want. And so as this comes down to the end, the messages are coming out more and more and more. I live in the near Philadelphia area, mostly all Democratic areas, but it doesn't make any difference. The messages are coming across all the time. We're not a swing state, but we're still getting buried with these messages.
And Pennsylvania was a swing state, but is it looking right now, is it going more towards Romney, is that right? Or what is the latest you've seen on your swing state? We've got some listeners up in the Pennsylvania area.
Okay, right now what I've been seeing is that it's still, as a state, looks like it's going to go for, it's still more blue, but there's a lot of red portions to it. So it depends on really what happens with the voters and how they think about what they're doing and what aspect they're going to be. Remember, the purpose of the political campaign process is the way that it's represented is that this person is your savior. This is why I'm going to vote for them, to get out of all the things that I fear solving my problem. And that's also your problem because you're not thinking clearly and you're looking for some other source other than God for your salvation. And as a result, you're easily triggered by all the emotions that are going on in the process. And so it's a combination of things that builds the self-identity of a person so they can look logically at what's going on and the way that it's going. And
I'm telling our listeners, we're talking to Donald Mann. He is a consultant with Rital Mann Consulting Firm and author of an interesting new book. We want to come back and talk about it. Okay, God, now what? And I want you to give a little thought and some ideas along that line. By the way, I want to tell our listeners you can get that book by going to our website at www.jimbrownusa.com. That's jimbrownusa.com. Don's book is up there, and you can get full order information and everything like that. So interesting to compare that to politics, Don, when we're talking about political and so on, to see what God thinks about a variety of things, if you'll share that opinion with us. So, Don, hang on. We'll be right back.
Righto.
Right here on the Genesis Communications Radio Network at GCNLive.com. Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network. Welcome back to Jim Brown's Common Sense. Now, here's your host and professor of thinkology, Jim Brown.
We've been talking about this election coming up with Donald Mann as the CEO and president of Right Man Consulting. Written an interesting new book that really has some lessons learned about the political situation today. The book is called Okay, God, Now What? You can find the book on our website at www.jimbrownusa.com. Hey, Don, can we swap from dirty politics to religion? How about that?
Absolutely.
All right. And give us the focus of this book. Interesting book. I had a chance to read a good bit of it over the weekend, and when you talk about, oh, God, now what? Interesting, though, you raise some questions in your book about practicalities in terms of our lives, about controlling our own destiny, and trying to make a focus of what God may want, but relying on your own abilities. You say, for example, that luck is highly overrated. And so why did you write a book like this to begin with?
Okay, let me tell you how I got to write the book was the book, the title, Okay, God, Now What?, talks about really two things. First of all, I'm in trouble, and I'm looking to God for answers because it's bigger than anything I can see that anybody or anything can help me with. And that's exactly what happened to me years ago. I was a corporate executive. I walked into my boss's office, and I went in happy and came out absolutely numb. And as I walked out in the hallway, another vice president met me, and here's what he said. Better men than you have tried to turn that plan around. So long it's been nice knowing you. So it was really a discouraging message. Not only that, it was halfway across the country. There went my family life. And it was a high-technology group of scientist engineers who were locked in fear. Now, get these words. They were locked in fear so that they were angry, fault-finding, and accusing other people all the time of the problem. They weren't owning it. And so I had to go in there somehow and turn them around because nobody else on the planet knew the technology but them. And that was where the Okay, God, Now What? Came from. And as I did, I realized there was, first of all, if I was in fear in any way that I acted, either overt or subtle terms, people pick up fear. It's contagious. People read it very quickly. So I couldn't transmit fear, and somehow I had to transmit hope. So I knew that for myself, I had to create a success environment for myself. I didn't know anybody else that could help me out of this impossible situation except God. So I developed my own program, how to build my own self-confidence attitude with God. And you know what? We did it. In 6 years, we went from failing to $500 million in business.
Well, let me ask you a few questions. I'm not playing the devil's advocate, but I'm just trying to get a little better explanation. You say, for example, in the book, that most people ignore the Bible because of anger towards God. Now, what do you mean by that, about we ignore the Bible because of anger towards God?
Well, a lot of people have been told that God's the problem for this, and that, and the other. We even have in the insurance industry, they call them acts of God. Right? Yet the greatest act of God was Jesus Christ who died for us, a theological concept that how does that appeal to me turning around a planet of people who have to be able to solve high technology problems and create inventions? Well, the issue is that God is there to help us. He's actually laid it on us, and we're the ones that need to go to Him. And we go to Him a variety of different ways, but people have been told that God's the source for all this stuff, and God does this and God does that, and they're bad things. So rightly, we get angry at the source of where it is. We were disappointed in prayer. Well, the issue is that just like with anything else, you got to learn to do it right. I can want to cook an egg, but if all I do is throw it on the ground and don't put any heat to it, it's not going to cook. And so there's a right way and a wrong way, and God's revealed how to deal with him through the Scriptures, particularly through the message of Jesus Christ. And the greatest thing he's given to us is a sense of identity that we get from Christianity, that we can balance ourselves with and against for everything else, and it changes your whole direction in what you do.
Yeah, I agree with you, and there's going to be a lot of listeners that disagree that God is not going to micromanage your life, and because if you allow that to happen, then when anything goes wrong, you blame the good Lord.
Yeah.
I've seen that through history, not just with individuals, but with countries, and say, oh, my God, why have you deserted me? And, it comes down to an interesting question you raise this. You talk about how luck is highly overrated. Actually, I agree with that. I think you ought to make your own luck, and can't expect either luck or asking God, "Hey, help me in this endeavor. Give me this one favor, God, and I'll leave you alone." Don't work that way, does it, Don?
No, it doesn't. It's more like plugging into a power source, and every time you look for something different, you're actually unplugging yourself. You know, the Bible has a story of Joseph, who was given a promise. promise and went through a lot of terrible times before they finally got to be the answer of that. But it says, in the whole time, he remained faithful to the Lord. And so that God, luck, we call the term luck. It's a term that I prefer not to use. It's how you actually talk about blessing, because preparation with motivation, when opportunity comes, you can respond properly. Okay, and for me, the greatest example I have for that is when I got this terrible job assignment, that I turned to the Lord, and I learned I had to get my thinking straight to be able to hear from him. Because he can talk all day long, but if I'm not tuned in, I'm not thinking the way he is, I can't hear him, right? We have the classic expression of people who bought a VCR back in the day, and they couldn't operate it because they didn't take the time to read the instructions. And there's a guy by the name of Jim, who was a Vietnam vet returning back from Vietnam. He got into business. His job was into sales, but things weren't working. He was stuck. He didn't know what to do. His marriage was falling apart. His family was falling apart. And he got a copy of OK God, Now What? And when he saw immediately how scripturally based it was. And he'd been a minister for years within his church, but when he saw the applications in it, particularly when he saw an affirmation E, where it talks about, therefore, if man be in Christ, is a new creature, he had never seen it applied in such a way, which is what I learned how to do. And so, as he started to do the affirmations in there, things started to turn for him. Here's how he described it for him. He said, prior to this, I was like a piece of paper blowing in the wind. I was up against the wall. I was up against the fence. I was tangled in the bushes. Nothing was working. Everywhere I went was going backwards. And I started to build this affirmations into me. And as I did, I became like a flag attached to a flagpole. And no matter how hard the wind blew, it was going to stay there. I mean, we're going to see this right now with Hurricane Sandy. We're going to see flags standing in the middle of a terrible storm because they're attached and made of solid stuff. He said, "His inside of him, something started to change." And you know what? As it started to change in him, his attitude toward business changed. His attitude toward sales changed. He started helping people better, and his sales grew. His marriage got better. First thing he noticed was there were no longer so many fights at home. Things in his life turned around because he started to do the affirmations. That's what he said happened to him when he did what was in OK God, Now What?
I got you. Now let me hit you with this one. Now this is interesting and a little confusing to me. You say actually the purpose of man is to fix the problems of God. Now tell me what you mean by that.
Okay, way back in Genesis, God said to Adam, subdue and establish dominion over the earth and over everything that moves upon it. Now, dominion sounds pretty cool. That's keeping it running right. That's keeping it work right. That's like dusting your house on a regular basis, right?
Right.
Subdue is a battle war word. It means intense fighting, intense agony, intense pain and suffering to win something. He was telling him, it's not going to be easy. You've got a challenge. You've got a difficulty. You know, a lot of theologians have different degrees about what was in the Garden of Eden, but there's nobody who disagrees what that word subdue means. It was the equivalent of World War I and World War II and whatever else put together all at one time. Talk about intense effort. And so what God gave Adam the assignment to was, you go into the earth, you establish my kingdom. Remember, the Our Father says, Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth. Man is the preeminent spiritual transmission vehicle for God.
Well, I hope there are lessons learned by those who want to lead us in so many professions who take on that undertaking, that we have a major purpose from the Lord, and that we should seize that purpose. And I hope we're wise enough to wake up and deal with that. Don, got to go. Thanks for spending some time with us today.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, and I want to tell our listeners, the book is called OK God, Now What? Good Lessons for Life. You can get it on our website at www.jimbrownusa.com. Don, thanks for being with us. We'll have to do this again sometime in the future.
Hey, look forward to it, Jim. Have a great day.
Same to you. Interesting guy there, talking to Donald Mann. He's given us some lessons to apply to our daily lives, and I liked his comments about slogans, how these politicians try to influence how we think, what we do, and put it in perspective for us.